Good afternoon, members. Welcome back to the Regulatory Reform Committee. I would like to call the meeting to order. Before we get started, please remember to silence your phones, including my own. Amanda, please call the roll.
Chair Rommel.
Here.
Vice Chair Rodriguez. Ranking Member Escamani.
Here.
Representatives Daly. Gia Lombardo.
Here.
Goff Marcil.
Here.
Gregory.
Here.
Grieco.
Here.
Harding.
Here.
Maggard.
Here.
Mariano. Nixon.
Here.
Umfroy excused. Overdorf.
Yes, ma'am.
Placon. Robinson.
Here.
Saroy.
Here.
Toledo.
Here.
A quorum is present, Mr. Chair.
Let the record record, a quorum is present, and we will get started. And it looks like Representative McClure is ready to go and present HB 331. You are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for allowing me to present House Bill 331, Displacement of Private Waste Companies. Currently, waste haulers providing service must be provided a three-year notice of possible displacement. If the jurisdiction decides to displace them before the 3 years, they must compensate the hauler 15 months gross revenue. This bill takes the just compensation to the end of the three-year notice period currently in statute. The purpose is to increase the protections for private haulers that might be displaced. There are several counties that still operate in a free market in relation to residential and or commercial waste collection. Because of those free markets, there are small businesses operating. This bill doesn't aim to have local government pay the just compensation. Rather, it strives to incentivize the local government to continue including all haulers operating in a jurisdiction. That is the bill, and I also have an amendment.
Thank you. Members, any questions on the bill as presented? Seeing those questions, you can present the amendment then.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the amendment does two things, and both of them came out of conversations with some of our colleagues. So there was concern in the last committee. There was language at the end of the bill that struck the ability for the local government and the waste hauler to continue to negotiate during the time frame after the noticing period. And so we put that language back in because we want the local governments and the private sector to have ongoing conversations and essentially try and resolve it before the end of the period. And then the other component, we don't want to rush to displace by making this active on a certain date. So we have put into place a December 31st, 2020 date into the bill via this amendment that any displacement cases that are going on currently up until that December 31st, 2020 period would not be affected by this.
Great. Thank you for that.
That's the amendment.
Thank you for that explanation. Any questions on the amendment? Seeing no questions on the amendment, any public testimony? No public testimony. So without objection, we'll show that amendment adopted. We are back on the bill as amended. Questions on the bill as amended? Seeing no questions on the bill as amended, any public testimony? No public testimony. Members, we're in debate. Seeing no debate, you are recognized to wave close.
Well, I guess I'll wave.
Thank you. Amanda, please call the roll.
Representatives Daly.
Yes.
Escamani.
Yes.
Gia Lombardo. Goff Marcil.
Yes.
Gregory.
Yes.
Grieco?
Yes.
Harding?
Yes.
Maggard?
Yes.
Mariano? Nixon?
Yes.
Overdorf?
Yes, ma'am.
Placon? Robinson?
Yes.
Rodriguez? Saroy?
Yes.
Toledo?
Yes.
Chair Rommel?
Yes.
The bill has passed.
By your vote, the bill will report favorably. Congratulations.
Thanks,
up next, Representative Yarborough with HB 6053. You're recognized.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Good afternoon to you and the committee, ranking member. Thank you for the opportunity to present this bill to you today, Mr. Chair. Just as some background for House Bill 6053, members, is this relates to valet trash service and doorstep waste containers in particular. And just so you, again, have it as background, we also have what is called doorstep refuse collection, which is a service typically provided in multifamily communities like apartments and condos. And it works like this. Trash is placed outside the door of the unit in an approved container and collected by hand by a service provider who takes it to the community dumpster or compactor. This can happen 5 to 7 nights a week or during the day whenever they have it agreed to. Benefits to communities are first and foremost that it is an amenity enjoyed by residents, but it also minimizes messes or leakages that can happen in hallways or stairwells. And overall, the communities that contract for the service appreciate that it can ensure a cleaner environment and better maintenance of public spaces. In senior communities in particular, it's beneficial as it limits the need for resident trips up and down stairs or through the parking areas and what have you. The valet trash industry has been operating for more than 25 years and now services approximately 2 million doors per day in 40 states. And in Florida, valet trash services approximately 350,000 doors per day in both apartment and condo communities. We have a robust competitive marketplace for the service in Florida, and it supports approximately a dozen companies and thousands of jobs. Moving more toward what we have in the bill before you today, prior to 2018, the industry was largely unregulated, but concerns were raised by fire officials that the practice could hamper means of egress and corridors in the communities. And at that time, the industry came together with fire officials and legislation was approved that provided a regulatory framework, limiting the size of the container that could be used in both interior and exterior hallways, and also providing other standards to ensure safety. House Bill 6053 before you today removes a sunset date from the statute that was put in back in 2018 in order to keep the existing regulations permanently in place. Removing the sunset will allow the industry to continue to operate with both certainty and standardized regulations statewide that have proven effective in ensuring the safety of communities while also allowing the service to continue. Mr. Chairman, committee, that's the bill.
Thank you. Members, any questions? Any questions? Seeing no questions, any public debate? Seeing no public debate, public testimony. Oh, we do have public testimony. Wow, a whole bunch too. Jim Horn, Affiliated Waste Solutions, waving in support. Jim McMillan from Florida Fire Chiefs Association. He's an opponent of the bill. Are you want to speak? You are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Good afternoon. Jim Milliken with the Florida Fire Marshals Association. And we are opposed to the bill for the following reasons. The storage of combustible materials and egress pathways such as hallways and balconies, et cetera, are always a great concern for the safety of building occupants and for firefighters responding to medical and fire emergencies. These practices are code violations due to the risk of fire with a quick spread potential, and for blocking hazards in the case of medical calls when emergency responders must have the ability to maneuver life-saving equipment. While we are sympathetic to the needs of the convenience this service provides to our aging population, we're also very concerned about the associated risk of extending the timeline on compliance with the provisions of this service. This timeline was established by the 2018 legislature to allow time for negotiations with the model code communities for placement of safe practice within the base of the model codes. The time given was 3 years, and that terminates with the repeal provision effective July this year. The fire service 3 years ago could have simply stated that this practice is dangerous and is well-established violation of adopted fire and life safety codes. However, we didn't do that. We adopted by working with the industry to develop safeguards so that the industry could continue to provide this valued convenience in a manner acceptable to our code enforcement communities. This negotiation was developed on the premise that the leadership in the doorstep refuse community would petition the main code promulgators and work to have this allowance placed in their base fire and life safety codes adopted throughout the industry. Their good faith efforts failed in that members who make up this committee worldwide did not find a safe solution for this service. As a result, the Florida Fire Code Advisory Council took this issue under advisement and placed the provisions currently found in Florida Statute 633.202, paragraph 20, and adopted those criteria as an amendment to the 7th edition of the Florida Fire Prevention Code, which took effect January 1st this year. So in conclusion, With the allowance for this convenience service substantially based on the existing statutory language now placed in the amended Florida Fire Prevention Code, we submit that the request to strike the repeal provision of Florida Statute 633.202, paragraph 20E, is not advised. The fire service honored this phasing period for the compliance identified in 633.202. Accordingly, vendors were given the 3-year window to make adjustments to become compliant with the agreed upon criteria. There are a few vendors who have chosen not to comply with these safeguards, while one company who is a majority stakeholder in this industry has honored all commitments made previously. We're concerned that this lack of compliance, when given the opportunity, will be reflected in manner which vendors perform to require timelines and container requirements found in the amended code. And therefore, we ask you please not move this bad bill forward.
Thank you for your testimony. One quick question. It's public testimony, not question.
Thank you so much, Chair. Thank you so much for being here. I'm just curious, these specific cans that help prevent fire, are they readily available? What's their cost range? Like, I'm just curious, what is, you know, why is there a delay in embracing the timeline right now? Do you have any idea into that?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. I do not know what those costs are or why some of the companies have not complied with it. We do know that the major stakeholder has complied with it, with the code, and done what was needed to be done.
Thank you. Representative Oberdorf, you were recognized for a quick question.
You put out a lot of statutes and a lot of different items there. Could you just speak to us in plain English for a second and tell us what you feel the problem is here?
You're recognized to try to explain. And
thank you, Chair. Sure, Representative. The problem is that we're not using the same containers throughout, that we ask the containers to be used in all the communities. The second problem is it blocks the egress of the pathways. So some condominium complexes, some apartment complexes that have this service, their egress is 36 inches, and you put something out there that's 12, 18 inches wide, we're blocking the egress. And if you've seen a stretcher coming up, stretchers take up a lot of room getting through those egress areas. Also, when we're coming through with fire equipment and hoses such as that, those things could cause things to get tangled up as well in the event that we're trying to get to the fire.
Great. Thank you for your testimony.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Up next, Ray Colburn, President and CEO of something.
Florida Fire Chiefs Association. We waive in opposition.
Waiving in opposition. Thank you. Kelly Mullett from Affinity Waste Solutions. She's a proponent, waiving in support. And Ron Book from Affinity Waste Solutions. Are you? You're waving, okay. Thank you. I'm sorry.
I was actually going to come.
You want? Come on. Come on down. Oh, they do wish so.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. Kelly Mullett, Ronald L. Book, PA, representing Affinity Waste Solutions. And the sponsor did a great job explaining the bill, the provisions, the services that exist today. I want to assure the members that a couple things. Number one, the companies that are involved in doing this service care very much about the safety of the communities they serve and the people that they serve. And the communities that offer this service care very much about the people that they serve and, of course, protection of their asset, right, which is the community. So I just want to mention that and say that you heard a lot about statutes quoted. Much of what's in the statute aligns with what's currently in the rules. There are size of container limitations, things like that, that already exist in the statute. The statute works very well in terms of safety and predictability and has over the course of time since it's been in place, and that's why we are requesting the removal of the sunset. And I just wanted to make myself available to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for the testimony. Representative Nixon, you are recognized. Sorry.
Thanks, Chair. Question, can you speak to what Representative Escamani asked in regards to the containers and if they're readily available, or do you know the answer to that question?
I do know the answer to that question, and yes, the answer to the question is no. Unfortunately, what's included, what's been adopted, in some parts, they're not readily available at all. And that is definitely a problem for the industry and its continued operation. But I think after listening to that testimony, there's really, I think that when the statute was approved 3 years ago, we largely settled the issue related to means of egress. But, and that's settled as well as far as rules are concerned. But Unfortunately, no. That technology that's required is not readily available. It's to the majority of the industry.
Thank you. Thank you for that clarification. Appreciate your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Ron Book from Affinity Waste Solutions. He's waving in support. Great. Members, we are in debate. Any debate on the bill? Representative Escamani, ranking member.
Thank you so much. I already shared this with the bill sponsor, and we had a great conversation about it. And my vote could change over time, but right now I'm leaning with our fire experts. I'm very cautious of any type of repealer that could potentially create a risky situation, especially for our seniors. So for now, I'll be down on this repealer. That could change as I have conversations with the stakeholders, but I just have a lot of heartburn in voting for something that could potentially make the work of our firefighters harder and, of course, put people in harm's way. So thank you so much, Chair.
Thank you. Additional debate. Representative Goff-Marcel, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Rep. Yarborough. He's been so good at talking to me and trying to explain this bill to me. And it's funny to me that this is one of the most bills that I've had to decide which way to go. And I came in here probably leaning towards yes, and was then convinced by the firefighters that came to that I should go no on this. And I'm hoping that as it proceeds through the process, and if it proceeds through the process, that we could put some kind of extension for those companies so they can do it in an inexpensive way, switch over to the proper containers that are in the code. Thank you.
Additional debate. No, seeing no additional debate, Representative Yarborough, you are recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate that. Your concerns, Rep. Goff-Marcel and Ranking Member Escamani, are noted, and I appreciate that. We do have another stop before we move to the floor for the bill as we track it along, and then it's the companions moving in the Senate, certainly. But what I wanted to mention is just a couple of things and then close. It was mentioned about the egress standards and all, which are, of course, very important, and that those are now in what is the seventh edition of the Florida Fire Code, which is outside of statute and is updated every 3 years as we go along. In the statute, if you're looking at the section that we're talking about in the bill, we do have the standards for egress that are mentioned, whether it's an interior corridor or exterior corridor. It says that the containers do not reduce the means of egress width below that required under the life safety code as adopted under the Florida Fire Prevention Code. So we recognize that that's a concern. We certainly don't want to put anyone in harm's way. We understand that it's not an unwise move to seek to make these containers flame retardant and have high standards for them. But we also, I also believe too, and in looking at this and studying the issue, that the standards that we adopted in 2018 are not unreasonable. So it's okay to update things over time and to move in that direction. Just a simple example for ease of understanding is that we would have these standards in place for those receptacles that would be outside someone's door, but yet 5 feet away inside the kitchen of a unit that those valet receptacles are outside of could have a $10 Sterilite trash can that's made of totally non-flame retardant material that someone purchased anywhere out there versus it being provided by the waste hauler or by the valet trash provider. So we don't mandate what's inside the unit. So again, I understand that's different than outside in the corridor, but definitely wanted to speak to the point of the egress. We already have that. We're in no way seeking to repeal that, just so you have some comfort on that. So Mr. Chairman, thank you for the consideration. I'll take these comments under advisement and ask for your support today on the bill.
Thank you. Amanda, please call the roll on HB 6053.
Representatives Daly?
Yes.
Escamani?
No.
Gia Lombardo?
Yes.
Goff-Marcel?
No.
Gregory?
Yes.
Grieco?
Yes.
Harding?
Yes.
Maggard?
Yes.
Mariano?
Yes.
Nixon?
Yes.
Overdorf?
Yes, ma'am.
Plakin?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Saroy?
Yes.
Toledo?
Yes.
Chair Rommel?
Yes.
The bill has passed.
Thank you. By your vote, we will show that bill report it favorably.
Thank you, Chair and Committee. Have a good afternoon.
We have to do a little bit of traffic control here. Some members got to get back to other committee. Up next, we're going to have Representative Beltran presenting HB 1307.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for the opportunity to present the bill. HB 1307 addresses unsolicited telemarketing calls, and should I address the strike call?
Yeah, you just explain the original bill briefly, and then we can go see if there's any question, then move to the strike call.
Sure. So the original bill is intended to broaden the scope of the unsolicited telemarketing calls that are prohibited. Under statutes from the 1990s, it has to be an auto dialer. An auto dialer was defined as a computer system that dials or just kind of spits out random numbers and calls you. That's, I guess, what they were doing in the early 90s. What they're doing now is they'll get a list. They'll get a targeted list of, for example, people who have cars that are coming off lease or car warranties that are expiring for the original manufacturer warranty. So they'll check that, and then they'll buy whatever 100,000 phone numbers, and then they'll call all those phone numbers. Everyone in this room has gotten probably a car or home warranty solicitation, and you can't even answer your phone anymore if it's not a number you know. You'd think it would be someone calling you about something you did in the process. But it's not. It's the car warranty people. Call me more than that. So I can't answer my phone if I don't know who it is. So that's the that's what the bill addresses.
Thank you, members. On the bill before the amended. Seeing no questions yet. You can describe the strike call.
Yes. Thank you, Chairman. The strike call basically does two things. One is there were certain exceptions and clarifications that I tried to put in to make sure that when we enact this statute that we're not going to have litigation over the meaning in terms of the written consent that you need to give and what that entails, and when they're allowed to initiate the calls. They are allowed to initiate calls for if you have a pending executory transaction. In other words, if you haven't delivered the merchandise yet and you've called or gone online and ordered something. The second part is we eliminate the private cause of action. So this would be something that would have to be enforced by the authorities.
Great. Members, questions on the strike call amendment? Representative Daly.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Representative, can you just address why you removed the private cause of action?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chairman. Yeah, we didn't have a consensus on the private cause of action. So we thought, though, that adding these regulations would at least be useful in that the Attorney General and the Ag Commissioner have kind of overlapping authority to enforce provisions of this. And there is a $10,000 civil penalty. So we can still enforce it that way, but we wanted to at least do something, and that's kind of what we had a consensus on at this point.
Ranking Member Eskamani.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Rep. Just curious, obviously this is a serious problem that drives all of us up the wall. Do we see class action lawsuits of folks that are getting, you know, calls from a specific company, and do those yield any success? I was kind of curious of what has been the current process to rectify a situation if you're on the do not call list, and has that yielded any type of actual halt of the nuisance?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you. That's a good question. So right now the landscape is we don't have a private right of action in Florida, but we have a federal statute. It's called the TCPA. It's roughly parallel to what we have now, except it has a private right of action. And it has nominal liquidated damages. The consequence, all that, to answer your question simply, is there are lawsuits, and they have to be class actions because the individual damages are not high enough, and there's no attorney fee statute in the federal bill or in the federal statute either. So it's a $500. It can go up to $1,500, but you're really not going to file the lawsuit and litigate that. So it's only class actions at the federal level. The issue you have at the federal level, though, and the reason why we would otherwise just sue in Florida under the federal statute, is it defines the auto dialer in the way that I explained previously, and there's actually a circuit split, and that's going to be resolved, I'm told, by the United States Supreme Court. But the way that Congress drafted that, again, it goes back to the antiquated or outmoded. It feels kind of odd to think of the 90s as, you know, ancient history, but I guess at this point it is. But you know, things have changed since then, and so that's sort of the landscape. So that's kind of where we are. This is prohibits a broader range of conduct, but it doesn't have the wouldn't have the private right of action. So.
Additional questions on the amendment? Any public testimony? Only on the bill. Okay, we're in debate on the strike law. Seeing no debate, we're going to show that amendment adopted without objections, and we're back on the bill as amended. Do we have questions on the bill as amended? Seeing no questions, any debate? Public testimony. Thank you, ranking member. Keep me on track here. Just thinking about all those phone calls. Zane Smith from AARP. Looks like I would like to appear. I'll appear. He's waving in support. I don't see him. Jacob Phillips from Florida Consumers. Proponent of the bill, you'd like to speak? Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, representatives. So I want to just briefly touch on something that came up, which is the question of enforcement at the federal level. There is, as a plaintiff's attorney who's also a card-carrying FedSoc member, this has been the last 2 years, the debate over the TCPA has been delightful, the circuit split, as far as whether how the telemarketers currently telemarket is an ATDS or not under the federal statute. And the way that it works is essentially that a company wants to market, they want to send a bunch of calls, text messages, they go to another entity that has software and they tell them what they want. That entity then goes to data aggregators that essentially troll the internet and they find numbers and names and they find the things that you like, the Facebook pages that you like, all of that, and they kind of create the system, right? So then they give that list of numbers, however many they got paid for, to the tech company. The tech company then on behalf of the telemarketing company sends text messages or voicemails or whatever the case may be. The question is that an automated dialer for purposes of the federal statute? And you've had Justice Barrett on the Seventh Circuit, when she was on the Seventh Circuit, say no. Judge Okudo in the Ninth Circuit say yes. Lots of textualist debates, it's been wonderful. In the 11th Circuit, the answer was a no, which is why there's been an uptick in Florida, Georgia, and Alabama over the past year and a half, roughly, where we've seen in Florida, for instance, calls go from about 18 to 19 robocalls per cell phone per month to now we're up to about 30 or 35 because there's essentially no enforcement mechanism at the federal level. The United States Supreme Court has already held oral argument. A decision will be coming. It's going to be close. Most people think it's going to be a no, which essentially means that the United States Congress would then have to amend the TCPA in order to encompass this telemarketing. May happen, may not, you know, we'll see. So the importance of this bill, in my opinion, is that it essentially allows for Florida, at least, to have their own TCPA that regulates what's actually happening in the telemarketing industry. We had a debate about a cause of action. Either way, though, to then allow whether it's the private parties in the market or whether it's the state, the ability to be able to prevent these robocalls as they're actually occurring right now, as opposed to how they occurred back in the 90s, is why I think this bill is very important and would urge that it be passed. So unless there's any other questions.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Members, we are in debate on the bill as amended. Representative Daley.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and Representative, I appreciate this good bill and anything we can do to curb these calls. I know, like many of us up here, I've gotten a number of calls from constituents urging us to do something or anything on it. I will tell you, I do like the private cause of action, would love in the future if we could consider having a conversation around that again, potentially adding it back in. And even though you're not wearing green on the most important day of the year, I'm going to vote up on your bill today. So thank you, sir.
Very good. Seeing no additional debate, Representative Beltran, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Chairman. I looked without success for a green tie in my closet this morning. So, but with that I close. Thank you.
Great. Amanda, please call the roll on HB 1307.
Representatives Daly?
Yes.
Escamani?
Yes.
Gia Lombardo? Goff Marcil?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Grieco?
Yes.
Harding?
Yes.
Maggard?
Yes.
Mariano?
Yes.
Nixon?
Yes.
Overdorf?
Yes, ma'am.
Platkin?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Saroy? Toledo?
Yes.
Chair Rommel?
Yes.
The bill has passed.
Thank you. By your vote, the bill will report a favorable. Congratulations.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, next,
we have Representative Haig presenting HB 385. You are recognized.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Committee, for hearing this, this bill, House Bill 385. The Villages is one of the state's largest economic drivers and has been incredibly successful in bringing people to our state and region, creating unparalleled economic growth. As an important part of the Villages' lifestyle has been the entertainment areas such as the town centers. For nearly 20 years, the Villages has obtained licenses from the state, which allow patrons to move about the town center's venues with their libations. The Villages has acquired new property and will be continuing the development. This bill merely reflects a geographical change in the community. There's no substantive changes to the how the licensing works. This bill merely reflects the new land to be developed. It's a geographical change. And that's the bill.
Thank you. Members, any questions? No questions. Public testimony? No public testimonies. Members, we're in debate. You are recognized to wave close on wait, Villages. Wait, Amanda, please call the roll.
Representatives Daly?
Yes.
Escamani?
Yes.
Gia Lombardo? Goff Marcil?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Grieco?
Yes.
Harding?
Yes.
Maggard?
Yes.
Mariano?
Yes.
Nixon?
Yes.
Overdorf?
Yes, ma'am.
Platkin?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Saroy?
Yes.
Toledo?
Yes.
Chair Rommel?
Yes.
The bill has passed.
Thank you. By your vote, the bill will report a favorable. Congratulations. Up next, we have Representative Caruso with HB 317. You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair Rommel, Vice Chair Rodriguez, and Ranking Member Escamani, and fellow members for hearing this bill. I'm a CPA by trade. I was featured in CPA Today by Senator Gruters and fellow Representative Cindy Stevenson. I bring forward today this public accountancy bill for retirees, HB 317. First, this bill revises a CPA license by endorsement provision by changing the language from another state or territory to any state or territory, basically making a technical correction. Second, the bill stipulates that non-resident CPAs licensees who are seeking renewal of their license in Florida to have satisfied Florida CPE requirements if they have satisfied their home state's CPE requirement. Third, the bill specifies that the continuing professional education requirements for ethics to include a majority of hours that review the provisions of Chapter 455 and related administrative rules. And lastly, the bill creates a retired status for CPA licensees 55 years of age and older who are no longer actively practicing as a CPA, along with the authorizations and restrictions accompanied by this status. That's the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Members, any questions on the bill? Ranking Member Escamani.
Thank you so much. Thanks for this great bill, Rep. I just wanted to double check. Do we know what that fee is for retired accountants to rejoin? And also, is creating a new fee going to require the supermajority vote, just for context sake?
You're recognized.
I'm sorry. I didn't hear that.
Oh, sorry. My understanding is that we're also creating a fee for folks who want to rejoin out of retirement, correct? I'm just curious, is what's the amount of that fee? And also, if we're creating a new fee, do we have to follow the supermajority requirement?
Recognize.
I think that's probably better answered by one of the representatives from the FICPA.
Thank you. Well, if we can't get that today, we'll definitely get it to you.
but yeah, I'd be happy to address that.
Additional questions? Members, we are in, any public testimony? We don't have, maybe, we're going to think about it. We do. We have Justin Thames from the Florida Institute of Certified Public Accountants. He's a proponent of the bell waving and support over here. Thank you. And members, we are now in debate. Any debate on the bill? Okay, no member debate. I just have a quick note. Hopefully when the board is looking at reactivating somebody's license, whether they're retired or just inactive, that they treat them equal. And because to me, you know, it's important whether, you know, you're retired or you just haven't used your license, become inactive. If they're, you know, reapplying, they're treated equally, because to me, there's really no difference here. If we could just make sure that that happens, that would be great. And you're recognized to close.
Mr. Chair, we're working on that, and we're with staff, so we will address that. And with that, I close.
Great. Amanda, please call the roll.
Representatives Daly?
Yes.
Escamani?
Yes.
Gio Lombardo? Goff Marcil?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Grieco?
Yes.
Harding?
Yes.
Maggard?
Yes.
Mariano?
Yes.
Nixon?
Yes.
Overdorf?
Yes, ma'am.
Plakin?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Saroy?
Yes.
Toledo?
Yes.
Chair Rommel?
Yes.
Bill has passed.
By your vote, show HB 317 reported favorably. Congratulations.
Top of the morning to you, Chair.
That was a great impression there. And up next, we're going to have Representative Fisher presenting HB 755.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. Committee substitute for House Bill 755, arrest booking photos that deal with mugshots postings. Innocence until proven guilty. It's a presumption of innocence that is one of the most sacred principles in the American criminal justice system. This principle is encapsulated in the U.S. Constitution within the 5th, 6th, and 14th Amendments. I mention this because there is a troubling issue that is going on in our state where certain websites post mugshots as a way to profit off of the suffering of others. Employers can simply Google somebody's name, and there are these mugshot posting websites that use bots that automatically save all arrest mugshots uploaded to state or county law enforcement websites, even if the people in question were not convicted of alleged crimes. These mugshots haunt people like Blake Mathesis, who's actually here in the audience today, for the rest of their lives. He is one of the people who've brought this issue to my attention. The legislature has worked on this issue in the past. Back in 2017, we passed Senate Bill 118 by Senator Stubbe at the time, now Congressman Stubbe, to prevent these websites from holding mugshots for ransom because they would force people to pay large sums of money to take them off their website. These websites found a loophole in that law, which allows them to continue to profit from the mugshots purely off of advertising revenues. They don't violate the previous bill because they do not charge any amount to remove the mugshots. These websites typically treat removal requests in an unprofessional, sometimes nasty manner. Under the current law, people can make a request in writing via their attorneys to these mugshot websites, along with any identifying documentation to remove the websites. There's a civil action that can be brought to the courts if the mugshot is not removed within 10 days of receipt of the written request. There's a $1,000 daily fine for noncompliance, which goes into GR. What this bill does is it broadens the existing provision for filing these civil actions to allow more people to have their mugshots removed from these websites and try to end the practice of mugshot posting websites having a commercial purpose or pecuniary gain from the mugshots of innocent people. The bill explicitly mentions that we are targeting entities and websites that publish these mugshots for pecuniary gain as the sole basis of their business model. So if you're a legitimate news organization or you're a law enforcement organization, it doesn't prevent them from posting it, but it prevents someone whose sole purpose of their business is to profit off of the suffering of others. And that is the bill.
Thank you. Members, questions? Questions on the bill? Seeing no questions. Oh, we do. Representative Plakin.
Thank you, Representative Fisher, for bringing this forward. I was on the other side of the 2017 bill with then-Senator Stube, and at that time, I was very happy to pass this because the stories, we heard many, many of these stories, what happened to people's lives when they were, adjudicated innocent or, not convicted. At the time, we had a concern of these companies are offshore, hard to get your hands on, so to speak, and hoping maybe some plaintiff attorneys would go find the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow to stop these companies. You may not know this, but I haven't really kept track of what's happened to that legislation since. Has there been any success? And again, even if we haven't so far, I think this is worth doing. But so what's happened over the last few years, if you know?
As far as people who have offshore businesses and things like that, it's outside the jurisdiction, and so it's difficult to prosecute. And actually, I'm looking forward to hearing your bill that deals with foreign entities here in America. So if there's some kind of ties that we can get to those companies and then go after them, I think maybe we can address that through the bill that you're going to hear in my committee, I think, next week.
Additional public testimony. Christian Miner from Florida Juvenile Justice Association, waving in support. Let's see him. And Blake Mathias, would like to speak? Welcome to the Florida House in the Florida Senate building. You're recognized.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Committee, for letting me speak today. Yes, I'd like to give a special shout-out to Representative Daley, actually, and Senator Bean for meeting me for the first time a year ago on Gator Day, and Representative Fisher for bringing this great bill. Before I begin, I'd like to address Representative Plakin's question. So that is actually a concern. However, the main ones in Florida are actually located in Florida, and they're registered to a P.O. box on SunBiz in Jacksonville. It's the same family who's been running these sites, and they continue changing their names, but they're the main one that have been in business. Matter of fact, there has been another website that's registered in Texas, and then even though one of the other websites, mugshots.com, is registered in the West Indies, the owners were actually just arrested in May of 2018 in South Florida for extortion. Now, some other states, what they have done is add a provision in that basically says that anyone posting mugshots in that state using that state's mugshots are deemed to be doing business in that state for jurisdictional purposes. So that is an option. Obviously, then, it's still hard to serve them and, go on like that. But I'll go on with my speech. My name is Blake Mathias. I'm here on behalf of myself and hundreds of thousands of other hardworking young Floridians whose mugshots have constantly been hurdles in their ways, their goals, and dreams. When the public sees images, they automatically assume the subjects are guilty when that's not the case. I was arrested and charged with a felony battery back in undergrad when I was working at a bar and broke up a fight. And the judge actually wrote an opinion saying I arguably saved the victim's life. And, now my mugshot is online forever and has come back to haunt me in job interviews and stuff like that. Mugshots can cost jobs, housing, all before the defendant even faces judgment in court. And a lot of the, especially after the summer at the George Floyd and the civil rights, movements, a lot of the largest newspaper publishers have already made it a principle to stop posting mugshots. Gannett, who is the largest newspaper publisher in 43 states operating over 1,000 weekly newspapers, announced in 2018 that they'd be removing all existing and no longer posting mugshot galleries. Some of the biggest newspapers in Florida have followed suit, Tampa Bay Times, Tallahassee Democrat, or Orlando Sentinel to go on. Now, another way to address this topic, which we're not doing here in this bill, is having sheriff's offices not post online to begin with. And some sheriff's offices in the state have already started doing that out of principle. On the top of my head, I know Pinellas County Sheriff's Office and Lee County have stopped posting them online. And thus, that no longer allows these bots to get hold of these sites. Yeah, and WTXL in Tallahassee stopped posting 2019. I think their general manager, Matt Brown, said it best. They asked themselves some questions, and the conclusion they arrived at is this: the booking reports only offer a small slice of the story, and we should no longer publish them because we are not providing further context, thus not making our community a better place. We are not updating the stories when the facts evolve. We are pandering to lured curiosity, the same desire that triggers rubbernecking at crash scenes. We are ruining people's lives and shaming people in our community for minor mistakes. 77% of employers Google their job applicants. Personally, when you Google my name, the third and fifth links are the mugshots, and it's the first Google picture. Approximately 77 million people in the U.S. has a criminal record. That's one in three adults, with 600,000 inmates released each year. The Center for Economic and Policy Research put out a study in 2010 on ex-offenders in the labor market, and they estimated that just criminal records alone as a hurdle to employment cost the U.S. economy roughly $6.5 billion per year. I'm sure you've heard this before, but if Florida was an independent country, we'd be the 17th largest economy, projected to be 10th by the year of 2030. Florida has created one out of every 11 new jobs since 2015. It's time for us to stop this and stop, you know, these mugshots from haunting people for forever, so that we can have people that aren't, you know, locked in a situation where they can't move on with their careers and their futures, and thus indirectly hurting the economy. With that, I'd like to thank you for your time, and I can answer any questions you may have.
Great, thank you for your testimony. Appreciate it. Additional public testimony? Seeing none. Members were in debate. Members, please. Representative Daly.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just quickly, I want to thank the sponsor for bringing this bill and working with Blake. Great job. Proud to say Blake's a constituent of mine, and really appreciate you bringing this on behalf of him and so many thousands of others that are impacted negatively by this game. Thanks, sir.
Representative Ranking Member Escomani.
Thank you so much, Chair. I also just want to thank Representative Fisher for this really good bill and Rep. Plakin for his past work on it. Blake, you are an incredible advocate. You should run for office one day. And let's do everything we can to also just break the stigma around folks that have a criminal background. This is a state that overwhelmingly supported rights restoration. We believe in second chances, and it's a shame that mugshots continue to be used as clickbait. And it's such a good decision being made by media outlets to stop. But of course, knowing that there's still money involved, we have to take every action we can to try to prevent past mugshots from haunting people for the rest of their lives. So thank you so much for your leadership on this, Rep.
Thank you. Representative Nixon, you're recognized.
Thanks, Chair. I want to echo the same sentiments that Rep. Escomani as well as Rep. Daly stated. I've had folks in my district that have come to me and spoke out against mugshots, some often having been on some news sites in our county. So I really am appreciative of this, and it just goes to what Representative Escomani stated earlier. So thank you for this.
Thank you. Representative Fish, I just want to thank you for bringing this bill. I wish that some of our local news and television news networks would do the same thing. It seems like they're so fast at putting up a mugshot of somebody, and, you know, many times they're not found guilty, but the damage is already done. And, you know, I guess we're in a society that it's about either embarrassing and harming people just because they want eyeballs. And I appreciate you bringing this bill forward. And you recognize the close.
I'll wave close.
Thank you, Amanda. Please call the roll.
Representatives Daly.
Yes.
Escomani.
Yes.
Gio Lombardo. Goff Marcil.
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Grieco?
Yes.
Harding?
Yes.
Maggard?
Yes.
Mariano?
Yes.
Nixon?
Yes.
Overdorf?
Yes, ma'am.
Plakin?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Saroy?
Yes.
Toledo?
Yes.
Chair Rommel?
Yes.
The bill has passed.
By your vote, please show HB 755, report of favorably. Congratulations. Up
Thank
next,
you.
And sorry to make you wait, Representative Clemens. Appreciate you being patient, and we'll please present HB 751.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Ranking Member. I won't try to embarrass myself and speak in some sort of Irish dialect, even though I do have some Irish blood in me. I do find it ironic, Mr. Chairman, that your committee is so gracious to hear two bills that has to do with alcoholic licensure on St. Patrick's Day. I'm happy to present HB 751 on behalf of the city of Gainesville in Alachua County. This bill authorizes the issuance of a special license to sell alcoholic beverages for truck operators for the consumption of those beverages within a food truck park, as defined by the city of Gainesville's code in a specific area located in Innovation Square. Now, the bill not only requires compliance with the city's rules, but also that the food truck park be permanently fenced and have sun sails and seating. Under Florida law, food trucks are unable to have more than a temporary alcohol license under the limited conditions due to their mobile stature. The food trucks in Innovation Square are not mobile. The drinks will be forced to be consumed within the food truck park, and the bill prohibits a food truck from selling alcoholic beverages for consumption outside of the food park. That is the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Members, any questions on the bill? Seeing no questions, public testimony. We have Lisa Rotundo from Trimark Properties. Oh, Lewis, I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm been sipping some of that Irish stuff already. Maybe. Members, we are in debate. Any debate? Representative Clemens, you are recognized to close.
I will waive, Mr. Chairman.
Amanda, please call the roll.
Representatives Daly.
Yes.
Escamani.
Yes.
Gia Lombardo. Goff Marcil.
Yes.
Gregory.
Yes.
Grieco.
Yes.
Harding.
Yes.
Maggard.
Yes.
Mariano.
Yes.
Nixon. Overdorf.
Yes, ma'am.
Clayton?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Sir Roy?
Yes.
Toledo?
Yes.
Chair Rommel?
Yes.
The bill has passed.
By your vote, please show HB 751 reported favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And on this festive day, I would invite all of you to drink responsibly because mugshots are still a thing.
Well noted. And up next, we're going to have Representative Posada Cabrera presenting HB 991.
Thank you, Chair. So currently, the Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services is fining gas station owners when skimmers are found on their pumps, even when the owners have put protective equipment in place. The fines can be up to $5,000 per skimmer, even when an owner has taken the proper safety measures. This bill would do two things. It removes the department's authority to fine the small business owner victims because of the criminal act of a vandal if and only if the station owner uses and installs protective equipment such as tape and locks on the fuel measuring devices. The bill does not protect gas station owners who fail to take measures to protect the motoring public from credit card theft. It also ensures that the regulation of petroleum fuel measuring devices falls to the state and under the Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services. That's the bill.
Thank you. I understand you have an amendment, but you're withdrawing at this time. So members, do we have questions on the bill as presented? Representative, Ranking Member Escamani.
Thank you so much, Chair. Thank you so much, Rep, for talking to me about the bill, too. I was just curious. I know part of the bill, my understanding, is also preemptive to local government. Some local governments have ordinances specific to gas stations. Could you just speak to that a little bit more, too?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. So, yes, it would provide that the regulation falls under the Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services. For instance, in Miami-Dade County, we have 34 municipalities. So can you imagine a small business owner who has a few stations and they're in different municipalities and each one is doing a different thing? This is what the department is designed to oversee. So it's better for, you know, our small business owners to have a clear and concise path of what they need to do.
Great. Additional questions? Public testimony. We have Nelson Diaz from Sunshine Gasoline Distributors waving in support. We have Nelson Diaz from Florida Petroleum Market Association. He's still not here and he's still waving in support. And we have Robert Finger from Florida Petroleum Markets waving in support. Wave there. Would you like to speak or? Good. Waving in support, thank you. Members, we're in debate. Ranking Member Escomani. I'm going to get it right by the end of the year.
You're perfect. Thank you so much, Chair. And thank you again, Rep. I reshare this, but just for the benefit of the members, I'm a little concerned about the preemptive measure. I know there are some cities, Lee County, Collier County, Charlotte County, counties, and the village of Estero have local fuel pump ordinances, at least according to some of my quick research. And I've not had a chance to talk to these local governments to understand why they do, and I'm really curious about that before I vote on this bill. So for now, it'll be no, but that could definitely change based on what I hear from those local governments. But I thank the rep for the intent. I definitely see the frustration in folks who are trying to do the right thing and getting penalized for that. So I definitely respect that point. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Additional debate? Representative Daly.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just briefly, and I know we spoke, and I appreciate your time last night and this morning on this bill. I'm going to be up on it today. I do share some of the heartburn with the ranking member over the preemption. I think that there may be some steps that certain municipalities have taken that are probably positive, and maybe they're worth looking at on a statewide scale or something, if that's the direction we want to go. But would certainly hope to continue working with you on the language, but I'll be up today. Thank you.
Okay, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Chair. This is definitely a work in progress, so I'm definitely open to seeing what these local municipalities are doing to make sure we put the best work product forward. At the end of the day, the goal is to make sure that we're punishing the bad actors and not the small business owners who are doing the right thing. Thank you.
Thank you. Amanda, please call the roll.
Representatives Daly.
Yes.
Escomani.
No.
Gia Lombardo. Golf Marcel?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Grieco? Harding?
Yes.
Maggard?
Yes.
Mariano?
Yes.
Nixon?
Yes.
Overdorf?
Yes, ma'am.
Plakin?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Saroy?
Yes.
Toledo?
Yes.
Chair Rommel?
Yes.
The bill has passed.
Members, by your vote, show HB 991 reported favorably. Congratulations. Up next, Representative Chambliss and Plakin presenting HB 953. You are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to my co-prime sponsor, Chair Plakin, for running this bill with me and allowing me to present it before this committee. HB 953, an act relating to criminal history and professional licensing applications. This addresses revising the period of time when a conviction or any other adjudication for a crime may not be grounds for denial of a licensure and specified professions, removing a provision requiring good moral character for licensure and such professions, requiring the applicable board to approve certain education program credits offered to inmates in certain institutions or facilities to satisfy training requirements for licensure and specified professions, also providing an effective date. It is important to note that this specifically will be affecting the construction trades contractors, as well as electrical trades contractors. Also, you'll notice in the bill that the review is limiting from 5 years to review the application, is limiting that back to 2 years, which is a really important point, as well as the fact that it will be taking away the good moral character as a grounds to deny a license, and also accepting educational program credits earned by inmates in any correctional institution that satisfies the requirements for a licensure. This bill does not have a fiscal impact on state or local governments. And unless Chair Plakin had anything to add, sir, that is the bill.
Okay, we're good. Members, do we have any questions? So there is an amendment, but any questions the bill is presented? You can please describe. I'm sorry, Representative Grieco, I didn't see you over there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Chambliss, is this your first bill?
Yes.
That you're presenting?
Yes, sir.
You recognize? Yeah. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, sir, it is.
Thank you. All right. Seeing no additional.
She has a follow-up. Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry, it happens. You have a follow-up there, Representative Grieco?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Chambliss, do you think that you have good moral character?
If you think you can answer it, you can answer that.
The constituents of House District 117 believe so, as well as my wife, and so I would say yes, sir.
Additional follow-up.
I tend to agree. I don't know if any of my colleagues have any follow-ups.
Anything else here? All right, Representative, please present your First Amendment.
Yes, sir. We'll be removing line 25 and inserting the following: unless at any point during the two-year period the applicant was serving jail or prison time. For the purposes of, again, in replacing the good moral character clause, using the two-year time period of not serving jail or prison time or being rearrested as an applicable measurement of good moral character.
Right. Are there questions on the amendment? Representative Robinson, was that just a scratch of the nose? Scratch of the nose, no questions, okay. We are in debate on the amendment. No debate, public testimony on the amendment, none. Show that amendment adopted without objection. We are back on the bill as amended. Debate, any debate? We're on public testimony, I'm sorry. We have quite a bit here too. Philip Sutterman from Americans for Prosperity. I know Philip is waving in support, I don't see him. Christian Camara from Institute for Justice, waving in support. Christian Miner for Florida Juvenile Justice, also waving in support. And Catherine Williams from Florida Rights Restoration Coalition is a proponent of the bill. Let's see here. And Robert Baldillo of waving in support. Thank you, waving in support. Everybody's happy here. Okay, members, now we're in debate. Representative Nixon, you are recognized. Followed by Eskimani.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Chambliss and Representative Plankin, I really want to thank you for bringing this amazing bill in front of us today. There's often talk about creating policies to help reduce recidivism, and I think this is one of them. Having been an organizer working with returning citizens, this is something that they definitely need, and I really thank you for this bill.
Ranking Member Eskimani.
Thank you so much, Chair. I just want to congratulate Representative Chambliss on carrying forward such a great bill. I remember when Rip Plankin was working on this last session as well. We do need to focus on reducing the element of folks who come out of our criminal legal system going back into it. And step one is finding a job. And we do know that we have a lot of work to do in our prisons, especially in investing in these vocational trainings. And I just want to encourage all my colleagues, especially for our freshman members, if you've never visited a state prison, you should. It's a very eye-opening experience, and it lets you see firsthand just the lack of resources within our prisons to get folks into a place of rehabilitation and back into our communities and as strong members of our economy. So with that, I'm really excited about up on this bill and look forward to more policies around this area.
Great. I want to thank you for bringing this. I just want to clarify one thing that Ranking Member Eskimani, I encourage everybody to visit our prisons, but on a volunteer basis, not on an involuntary basis. But I do credit you for your first bill for championing something that can affect somebody's lives. You know, once somebody serves their time, we want to give them every opportunity to be successful in society. And by doing this, I think you're going to give a lot of people a great opportunity. So with that, you are recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, I just want to thank my prime co-sponsor, Chair Plankin, for working with me on this and helping me to address this important issue, and I thank all the members for their comments. They pretty much made my close for them. So on that, thank you, and I hope that I'll have your support on this bill.
Thank you. Amanda, please call the roll.
Representatives Daly?
Yes.
Eskimani?
Yes.
Gia Lombardo? Goff Marcil?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Grieco?
Yes.
Harding?
Yes.
Maggard?
Yes.
Mariano?
Yes.
Nixon?
Yes.
Overdorf?
Yes, ma'am.
Plankin?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Saroy?
Yes.
Toledo?
Yes.
Chair Rommel?
Yes.
The bill has passed.
By your vote, please show HB 953 reported favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you, sir.
And I'm up last, I believe, if I counted to 10 correctly. Representative Toledo presenting HB 473. From the podium. And with her nice St. Patty's Day green with shiny trim outfit.
Thank you. Good afternoon and happy St. Patrick's Day. I do feel like a Latin leprechaun with this all this green on. Members, House Bill 473 will simplify the construction payment process by making standardized statutory lien and bond release language the norm. This bill makes multiple updates to the construction lien law. Several stakeholders, including the material suppliers, the Florida Bar Real Estate, Real Property Probate and Trust Law Section, the Associated General Contractors, the Associated Builders and Contractors, and the Florida Home Builders Association have worked on the provisions of this bill during the 2020 session, which we passed off the House floor, and the 2021 legislative session, and we are continuing to work on one last item on this bill. The bill provides that a liener cannot be required to furnish a lien waiver that is different from the statutory form unless the liener or claimant has contracted with the owner to use a different waiver form. The bill also provides that a single claim of lien can be recorded for one improvement under a single direct contract or multiple direct contracts between the same parties. The bill creates an improved process for terminating a notice of commencement and recommencing under a new notice of a commencement and allowing construction to continue uninterrupted while still ensuring everyone still gets paid. And the bill clarifies that liens may be released in whole or in part and provides the methods for recording a satisfaction or release in the clerk's office. That is the bill.
Thank you. Members, any questions? No, seeing no questions. Any public testimony? We have some. Kurt Hambrick from the National Utility Contractor Association of Florida, proponent of the bill. Kurt Hambrick from Florida Road Material and Construction Association, still a proponent of the bill. Carrie Hambrick from Florida Home Builders Association. Is she here? No. Oh, there. So she's a lukewarm proponent of the bill currently. I'm going to remember that. Melissa Ramba from the National Association of Credit Management Improvement Construction Practices Committee. Waiving in support. Wade Mullins from Quality Precast. Wishing to appear in person. And you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair, and Ranking Member Escamani, and the rest of the committee. Thanks for letting me come
Can
and talk.
Can you step a little closer? Thank you.
Thanks for letting me come and talk to you folks today about something I've been dealing with for nearly 37 years, signing lien releases. I've signed over hundreds of thousands of lien releases. I see a lot of different language in lien releases. I see language that says our lien release is partial when it's not. I see language that says it's a conditional release when it's not. And I see language that is having to do with pay when paid clauses, retention, hold harmless, warranty language, defend the owner, developer, and general contractor in court in case anything goes wrong. And that has happened to my company one time when our sales manager signed the wrong document. When he shouldn't have. This body of legislators in 1996 put into the statutes a simple lien release form for partial and final lien releases. The legislators also put in that statute something that said, I don't have to sign them if it's something different than what you all have put into statutory form. That has not stopped many people from putting things downstream and asking us to sign things. I've been strong-armed more than once by contractors through the subs who say, I can't get paid because you're holding my money because you won't sign their form. That's not fair to me. That's not fair to my subcontractor customers. And it's not in the statutes to sign that kind of language. You're probably going to hear such things as additional language is needed. I concur. That's fine. Put it on a different document, like the legislature has already said it should be. I'll be glad to take it down the hall to my boss, our CFO, and see if they want to sign it. It doesn't need to come to my desk. It doesn't need to be in a lien release. You might hear that we're interfering with private contract rights. Well, I have a contract right here. It's a credit application. It says we're going to use statutory forms. So when I get something later down the pipeline, that's interfering with my private contract rights. That's not fair. That's something I know you're very concerned about with fair play. There are 8 different documents in the Florida Statute 713 that says must or shall. But when it comes to the lien releases, it says shall be in substantially this form. Thank goodness I don't have to sign something else. Arizona, California, Texas, they all have stronger language in their standardized lien release forms, which is about fair play and good public policy. You'll hear the bad actor argument. You can't legislate bad actors out of existence. That's not going to happen. But you can be fair and pass this bill.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, Carol Bowen, Associated Builders and Contractors of Florida. You are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and thank you to Chair Toledo. She's graciously trying to work with everybody, and lien law is like the third rail of construction. It impacts every element of it differently. We're more of a cautiously monitoring, currently concerned, but there's no box on that. So I just wanted to, in deference, clarify. She was great last year. I'm trying to get our association to a point where we can be neutral if we can. We represent general contractors, associates, subcontractors, and suppliers. And so any changes to this underlying statute impacts them all differently, and they're probably still arguing about, you know, what a fix could be. But I am trying to get something that can be more helpful to the discussion. Today we're opposed. I know there's language being debated, and so we look forward to seeing that. And I want to thank the sponsor for her willingness to chat with everybody on it. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. H. Brown from the Real Property Probate and Trust Section of the Florida Bar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members of the committee. And thank you specifically to Chair Toledo. She really has been great working on this bill, not only last year, but this year. And we really appreciate it. French Brown, on behalf of the Real Property Probate Trust Law Section of the Bar. I also, too, didn't necessarily have a clear box to check on the form. I checked proponent because there are about a half dozen provisions in this bill that are priorities of the bar. And we really appreciate that the sponsor is included in the bill. It's just this final issue that I would say we're probably more so here testifying today on information purposes. But this waiver and lien release issue is a very real issue and does concern our members. Couple just things that I'll add, and Wade did a good job of explaining. We also think this is an issue of fairness, and we also agree that you can't necessarily legislate for all the bad actors that are out there. But what our position is at the bar is that if you have two individuals that have reached a contract, if we reach a contract that says you're going to use a statutory form, I agree with Mr. Mullins that should be the form that's used. Separately, if you and I agree to a different form of contract that has additional terms, because the statutory provision right now just says that it has to be in substantially similar. If you agree to additional terms and conditions before you provide any services, before you provide any materials, before you provide any labor, then you should be bound by the terms of that contract that you entered into. And that's really the position where we are, and that's the language that we're working with the sponsor to hopefully get in this bill to clarify that those contractual terms would continue to apply if you agreed to them prior to providing the services under your contract. So with that, I'll stand open for any questions.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. We appreciate it. Up next, we have Warren Husband from the Florida Associated General Contractor Council. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Bedding cleanup and
just yeah, thank you.
Sorry, to get it closer.
Okay. Yeah, that's perfect. So the millions of folks home watching can hear.
Oh, I'm sure. As opposed to the committee I was in this morning, that was jam packed with folks. But again, thanks to Representative Toledo. She's been very gracious with her time and has spent a lot of time, you know, on this bill and with us. And as French indicated from the reptile section, there's a variety of good provisions in the bill. Unfortunately, the one provision about lien waivers is what unfortunately forces us to kind of be in the opposed column. And just to give you some context, because I know many of you are probably not steeped in construction law. Sometimes I wish I was not. But remember that in the construction context, you're talking about a kind of a chain of contracts. You've got the contract between the owner and the general contractor. That general contractor is then going to enter into subcontracts with a variety of subcontractors, electrical, plumbing, you name it. Those subcontractors will enter into sub-subcontracts. So there's these chains of contracts, and then there's material suppliers as part of that that chain of contracts as well. Excuse me, got to breathe. And what lien waivers are is essentially part of the payment process. It's a form that each of those individuals in the chain has to fill out as part of the payment process as you're going through a project. So, you know, our members are commercial contractors, so the project could last, you know, a year or more. And so you're going to have multiple payment requests within the context of that year, and these forms are obtained from each of these individuals in the process to say, okay, I've performed the work and I'm going to waive my lien rights for whatever the payment amount is through a particular period of time. And the issue is, should all parties always be required to use the statutory form, or could two parties in the process agree that they're going to use a different form? And the issue is not if Mr. Mullins and the material supplier he works for, if they don't enter into a contract saying they're going to be obligated to use a different form, no one on our side of the table, as far as I'm concerned, is suggesting that they should be required to do so. But if they have entered into a contract that requires them to use a different form, then like any other commercial party, they should be obligated to fulfill the terms of their contract. And that's our ultimate, you know, bottom line. And we're certainly working to try to get there with the bill sponsor and the other folks, you know, that are involved, just to kind of uphold that basic principle that if you've agreed to do it, you ought to be required to do it.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Members, we are in debate. Representative Robinson, you are recognized.
Thank you so much, Chair, and thank you, Representative. I don't know if I've ever seen folks that are opposing or partially opposing a bill be so complimentary of the bill sponsor. It just shows how much you work with them. I am a bit concerned about that one issue with regard to the privity and the freedom of contract, but I'm going to be up on it today and know you will work this bill and try to resolve that one lasting issue.
Representative Greco, you're recognized. No, Representative Goff-Marsal, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Rep. Toledo, for this good bill. I really do like the intent behind this bill. I also have concerns about what the real property probate and trust law section, what they talked about today. Full disclosure, I am a member of that section. So I do trust them, and I trust you to work with them to alleviate their concerns with your bill. But thank you. It's a good bill.
Ranking Member Escamani.
Thank you so much. I just wanted to echo Rep. Robinson's points about Chair Toledo working with all the stakeholders. I do not know a lot about construction law. I feel like just reading the bill, I've learned a lot and hearing from the testimony as well. So I voted yes on it before. I'm going to vote yes on it again. There is a problem to be solved, and I feel pretty confident that with all the stakeholders engaged, that solution will be found. So just continue the dialogue, keep us in the loop, and I look forward to seeing it when it gets to the House floor with that final product, with everyone's perspectives involved.
Okay, Representative Toledo, I have to give you credit. I don't think I've ever seen a committee where there's about 10 appearance cards, and I think almost everybody that spoke was an attorney, that they all kind of like, I don't really like it, but I kind of like it. But when we're dealing with contracts and attorneys, I think you must be in a perfect spot because it seems like everybody's a tad equally uncomfortable. So with that, I think you're doing great on it. And if we ever make one side like really, really comfortable, the other side hate it, it's probably a bad bill. So I think you're doing good. So with that, close.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, members, for all your kind words and every speaker. We are working a lot on this bill and trying to get to a place where we can pass it and everyone's happy. But the intent of this bill is to protect the property owner and to help the subcontractors get paid for the work they've done. A lien waiver is provided when the work is done or the materials have been purchased. So it should be really clean and simple, and anyone can sign it. You shouldn't have to hire an attorney to look at the lien waiver because it has additional language on it. I think that's where we differ. If you want additional language, you have the ability to have a contract with that additional language. It should be in a different place, not in a lien waiver. But I will continue to work with the stakeholders and try to get to a place where everyone's happy. But with that, please support this bill.
Thank you. Amanda, please call the roll.
Representatives Daly.
Yes.
Escamani.
Yes.
Gia Lombardo.
Yes.
Goff Marcil.
Yes.
Gregory.
Yes.
Grieco.
Yes.
Harding.
Yes.
Maggard.
Yes.
Mariano?
Yes.
Nixon?
Yes.
Overdorf?
Yes, ma'am.
Plakin?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Saroy?
Yes.
Toledo?
Yes.
Chair Rommel?
Yes.
The bill has passed.
Show HB 473 reported favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you.
All right, members, I think we're done. We don't have anything else on the agenda. And if there's no further business, Representative Harding moves we adjourn. So without objection, the meeting is adjourned.